This is that other sports shit. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the official before Christmas That Other Sports Show podcast. We have one every year. This is it. It's going to be a good one because there's not a ton of action going on out there in the sports world, right? Basketball is only a quarter of the way done. NFL is heating up, but you know that we're going to be hitting NFL stuff. You know that there was a pretty big MMA card last week, UFC 296. We saw some stuff happen. And there's not another card for quite some time. So we're going to do some filler stuff today. It's going to be fun. Sit back, relax, grab your favorite beverage, grab your favorite snack. Hold on tight because we're about to get this thing jumping. Folks, it's almost Christmas. I hope that you are ready. I hope that presents are wrapped and under the tree, just snuggled all nice and tight with lights all over the place. And everything looks and smells like Christmas time in your home. I am Jesse Thomas. You are hanging out with me today. And hanging out with me, as always, every week, in and out, is Mr. Jason Valdez.
We've made it 11 seasons, 30 episodes. We've been doing this show so long, Jesse has become a grandfather. And it's a joyous time of season. Jess, I am baked like a gingerbread man, so lasso me in if you need to. As a matter of fact, speaking of favorite drinks, let me get my bang open right now.
Got
my blue raz. So we got a little uppers, little downers. You know how we do it, Jess. I'm looking at the Christmas tree. I'm looking at the gifts. I'm thinking about how grateful I am. When you get our age, Jess, when you get older in the tooth, you start thinking about how grateful you are for the moment. You know, when you're younger, it's the gifts. But when you get older, it's the moment. It's celebrating the moment. It's enjoying watching your kids and now your grandkids. Jess, talk to me about how much you love this holiday.
I have always been a Christmas guy. I love Christmas. And most kids will say, well, yeah, you know, as a kid, everyone loves Christmas. But in my dysfunctional family growing up, there was so much back and forth all throughout the year that the only thing that you really truly look forward to when it came to a family event was Christmas. Everybody put on their best suits. Everybody put on their best attitudes, their prettiest faces, and pretended to love one another for at least one day out of the year. Amazing time. Everyone got together. They forgot about all the petty arguments. They forgot about all the stupid fights. They forgot about Uncle Johnny owing Cousin Timmy $25 from 3 years ago. And everybody just sat down. They had a couple drinks, they had some food, they had some pie, and then eventually we opened up some Christmas Eve presents, and then Christmas Day, you get up early as a kid, run downstairs, and just start, like, banging walls and stuff, trying to wake up your parents, say, get them come downstairs so you can open up gifts. Christmas time is magical, man. I mean, I'm just saying, without all the hoopla, it really is a magical time. I truly love this time. I am a grandfather now, so I have two grandkids that I get to buy for. That makes it even more amazing for me. And as you know, when your children get older, gifts change, right? Like, you can get away with, like, giving blocks and, like, maybe a $5 pack of Legos. As they get older, shit gets a little bit more expensive. Maybe less presents, but more expensive. I'm back to buying, like, the normal little kid stuff, and it's fun to do. But tree is up. Everything's decorated. We're doing, we got sugar cookies in the oven right now. We're about to do this thing up big. Tomorrow's my Monday back at work. We're having a Christmas little get-together celebration feast and Secret Santa.
Is it a pink elephant? Is that what they call it? White elephant? You're doing a little gift exchange?
No, we're just doing the Secret Santa. So basically, you pick a name out of the hat, and that's who you buy for. So, you know, and last year we did it. It was super cool. Everybody kind of, like, actually thought about some really fun gifts for people.
Unique stuff for that person.
Yeah, and you know what? Like, for example, a friend of mine is buying for one of the office specialists. The office specialist says, you know, hey, like, this candy, I like office supplies. I don't know why she put office supplies. She's an office specialist, though, so maybe she needs them. So he went and bought her these two pens that have, like, if you push the button, it's got, like, Rock'em Sock'em robots on top, and you can fight with them. Like, how cool is that, man?
That's badass.
It's cool. What about you, man? What's going on with you?
I'm jealous. Okay, so a few things. Shout out to people that still go to work, because I work from home. I don't get that fun stuff. I don't get the potluck. I don't get the white elephant or the gift exchange or the secret Santa. There's none of that. We had a work meeting today that was virtual, and then everyone says Merry Christmas, and everyone talks about how grateful they are, and then that's it. That was it. That was literally my Christmas party for this year. Shout out to mi gente, my Mexican people who celebrate Christmas, Christmas Eve midnight. A lot of families, a lot of people, a lot of our West Coast listeners, our people down south, you know what I'm saying, our real thick Latino listeners know it's kind of a tradition that a lot of cats do. They'll do Christmas Eve. They'll get their families together, and everyone will eat.
Real quick, explain this to me. So I've had some people at my work. You know, I work with some Hispanic folks, the lovely guys and gals, and we've talked about Christmas. And they've talked about just this huge celebration that happens on Christmas Eve, right? Yep. Like, everybody gets together. It's like this huge party, lots of
Christmas
food, lots
Eve
of things.
Night. It's a big
tell me
deal.
About this, man. How does this happen?
That's the gist of it. And this is something that I've known from a lot of families that have done it. I was a part of a family that did it. It sounds terrible, but in a previous relationship. And my mom didn't do it. I was going to get into what my family's always done after I got this shout out. But you get together right around 8 or 9 o'clock. You drink a lot of alcohol. Someone brings tamales, or maybe there's a tamale cook-off like in the daytime that goes into the nighttime. But it's usually more of like a smorgasbord of people just bringing a lot of shit. Someone will bring pizzas. Someone will bring rotisserie chicken. Someone will actually make a turkey. Like, it's just a bunch of different random foods. And you're just eating, drinking, having a great time. The adults usually do more of a white elephant. And then once midnight comes, 12 o'clock on the dot, the kids are opening gifts. And no joke, once those gifts are opened, everyone takes their photos and they're out of there. Everyone's driving home drunk right around 12:45, 1 o'clock. It's a great thing. I'm sure the responsible people are Ubering.
Yes,
the responsible people are Ubering, right, Jess?
Oh, yes, of course.
What my family does as an only child and as a spoiled little kid is my mom has always done Christmas Eve Santa comes. When I was a kid, I was always told Santa comes early for us because he does the last letters first, and with me being a V, Santa comes on Christmas Eve. So that was what I was fed, and I always thought it was cool because I got to open my presents before everybody else. But it was also a thing where my mom smartly went, okay, well, I know we're going to be going here Christmas Eve night. I know we're going to be going here Christmas Day. So we did our little, again, only child thing together. And it was dope. It was cool because I always got cool kids. So shout out to my mom. Cool. And now, full circle, my mom will be here Christmas Eve morning. She will drive her ass here at 6 or 7 in the morning. And we will all open gifts together. She'll have a little hot chocolate. We'll bullshit. And that, you know, and it's all good. It's a full circle of life thing. The 24th Christmas thing that she brought together, I've shared with all of my kids. My 24-year-old child will be here. My teens will be here. My youngest will be here, Jess, the 4-year-old. So it'll be a grand time. It'll be a lot of fun. Like you said, we spent a lot of money on these goddamn gifts. So my kids ain't opening a lot, but what they're opening has a lot of value. I'll tell you that right now. That is broke.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. Christmas is the time to splurge, though, right?
It's worth it. We're doing prime rib, throwing a prime rib in the smoker. So the Traeger's prime rib, we're really not fucking around, taking it to the next level. And we'll eat well. And then the tripped out thing is, again, you know, my not to get too weird or too personal, but my teens, they'll go back to their mothers, and then their mother goes and does the Christmas Eve into Christmas Day thing with her family. And my oldest child will go wherever she goes with her significant other, and then my wife will shut it down. She will start packing shit that night, Christmas Eve night. My wife, she won't put the trees away. We have 4 trees, Jess. She won't, three fake, 1 real. So she won't put the trees away. She won't take them down until like after Christmas. I like to have my Christmas story moment with her, you know, the end of Christmas story.
Yes, of course.
Where the dad and the mom are just sitting and they're looking out the window and they're just reflecting and she's got a glass of wine and the lights are out. So we'll do that with our fake fireplace. We'll turn the heat on our fake fireplace and we'll look at our trees and we'll have a moment. You know how that goes.
Fucking love it. Sexy time.
And that's it. Yeah. That's how we get it. So listen, ladies and gentlemen, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas,
you're listening
y'all.
To this before Christmas, thank you. We appreciate you. Cheap. Quick plugs. Shout out to everyone who has supported us this year. Jess, start the list, please.
Man, the list is quite long, actually. Got to start off with Variety Sports Network, just because, you know, we talked back and forth for a little while at the beginning, like the very beginning of the year. They said, hey, we want to bring you guys aboard. We're doing this thing. We're trying to get, you know, acknowledgement of all these different podcasts. Come on board if you want. We talked. We made it happen. And they all year, and hopefully that huge support will continue both ways. You know, we try to help support them as much as possible as well. Shout out to the Variety Sports Network YouTube page. They're closing in on 1,000 subscribers, I believe.
That's
so
amazing.
Get in there and subscribe. Variety Sports Network on YouTube. And then their X/Twitter handle is Variety_Sports_. So go follow them. All the individual accounts, podcasts that are attached, feel free to go like look through them. There's NBA, there's NCAA football, basketball, there's NFL, obviously, like multiple football versions of podcasts. There's baseball, there's hockey, like they kind of cover a little bit of everything. And then of course, while you're there, you can always follow us at Team Toss 21. Shout out to guys like Justin Von Doom. He's an OG, right? Like he's an OG with us. Love that guy. I can probably say that I've actually met that guy in person. So, you know, like he's a real friend. Like, and I mean like real as in the fact that like I've seen him and had beers with him. So
we appreciate Justin.
Yes. Justin, JVD, we love you. Smash Squad MMA on Twitter/X, whatever you want to call it. He has really like just jumped on the Team Toss bandwagon.
Enormous.
And he was cool with us before, always like, you know, just jockeying back and forth, you know, different topics and stuff like that. But he's really jumped on board. He, you know, listens to the show, gives lots of good feedback, and he's just a cool ass dude. So go to Twitter/X and follow at Smash Squad MMA. Mikhail, he's off the chain, man. He's got all sorts of stuff going on. It's a little bit of sports, a little bit of real life, a little bit of fantasy life, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
Politics, whatever.
Yeah. So
try and follow Mikhail before he goes private again, because once he goes private,
or before he gets shadow banned by
Elon.
So
that's I'm follow that guy. Him and Jay.
Chris, what is Chris? I don't see Chris's handle.
XYT
anymore.
Music.
XY. Music.
Is it XYT music?
I don't know if it's still there, but if you follow Chris W, he's one of our favorite guys. Obviously, he rolled with Jay for a long time before we all met, right? Before I met even both of them.
Yes.
And they're like old school, like back on the pond, like, you know, running those forums and stuff like that.
I've known Chris for 23 years. So
amazing,
crazy.
Right?
23 years. Yes. Shout out Chris. Shout out Double L. Shout out the kids.
And the kids. We love you guys. Legitimately, we have love for you guys.
Shout out Shay.
Like our boy Shay. Like Shay is he's got to be one of the craziest guys. Like he's the guy that you really want to go hang out with like afterwards, like after work. But the reason is because you don't know where you're going to fucking end up. Or
you're
going to
be smoking cigarettes.
Or like
you don't
what's
smoke
gonna,
cigarettes.
You have no idea. Shay, we love you. Shay Rollins. I believe it's Chef Shay Rollins on Twitter/X. Am I missing anybody here? I feel like I'm missing people.
Shout out Fatboy Fadeaway Sports.
He's
really giving us a ton of love.
Brian
Part
and,
of that
and
variety.
Tyler, yeah.
Yes. Brian in 2024, I'm trying to get on the Brian bandwagon before it gets too late. Because
we need to bring him on the show.
We're
going to
do a wrestling podcast real quick, Jess. Sure. Brian and I are We're cooking up a wrestling podcast. We might have to. Hey, we're doing it with or without you, Jess. He's ready to talk wrestling. He's fired up.
I love like the mix and match of what's going on. Variety sports.
The variety sports multiverse is gonna happen.
It's
saying it for months, but it's like steps away. It's just a matter of he works late nights, and we never tape night shows, and that's a big problem. I'm saying that as we tape this at like 4:35 p.m. So we're kind of, but we really don't tape night shows. So, but shout out Brian, shout out Tyler, just shout out to everyone who supports us. Shout out Double Double Podcast. They've been fun. I've been checking them out as well. Just shout out everyone. Happy holidays. If you're listening right now on Spotify, on Apple, however you are finding us, man, we appreciate you.
Yeah, of course. Just the people itself. Our numbers have done very well, especially the second half of this year. And our numbers aren't necessarily based on like what Jay and I do, because we've never really changed the show. It's just whoever's out there giving it a shot, right? Like in a shot, coming across it, like on Twitter or whatever, or maybe like Variety Sports, you see it on their stuff and you're like, hey, man, I'm going to check it out. If you like it, whether you listen 30 seconds of it, 30 minutes of it, or the whole like hour and a half or whatever we got going on, we thank you for all that. The love and support is huge. We appreciate you guys, especially this time of year, man. Like I said, it's a magical time of year. It's Christmas, baby.
And so we got to show our love. Plus, honestly, we don't know if we're doing a show next week. Like we're talking about it, but you never know. There's no combat sports next week's football.
The end of the year stuff. It's gonna be that last show is that's a sticky icky right there. I never
like this is it. Yeah, this is really it. Here is tonight's itinerary, because we're going to keep it moving here. We're going to recap UFC 296 main card. We are going to give you our NFL pick'ems. We've got the spreads up. We're ready to do that. We are flying through the trash games. We've said this for 14 weeks. Week 15, week 16, we are finally flying through the trash games.
We're going to try our best.
We're signing documents. We're going to cut a finger off if we go too goddamn long on bad teams like the Bears. We've done it too much.
Lord.
But we are starting with something unique, because we always want to give the people what they want. We want to give the new listeners what they want. And when Jesse does his research, when he pulls up the data, he's found out, once again, the wrestling stuff. That's what gets you guys going. It's the end of 2023. There's really no more big pay-per-views or big matches coming up here, Jess. But I want to start with you, Jess. It's been an incredible year for pro wrestling. I feel like it might be as hot as it has been in 15, 20 years. The boom is back. I'm opening the floor. Any promotion, whether you want to say, oh, Ospreay, because he's wrestled at many different promotions, whether you want to say Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, Kenny Omega, any of these guys, or if you even want to just switch it up with someone that would completely surprise us, Jess, from January 1st to today, and whatever metrics you plan on using, I don't want to give you my metrics, but your metrics. Who do you think is the wrestler of the year?
So I've actually thought about this before. So like, and we've tweeted back and forth, you know, who we have, you know, at certain times have thought was going to be professional wrestler of the year. And I've seen, you know, I've seen Meltzer, I've seen some of these guys' pages, I've seen some of their product come out. They say like Roman Reigns is number one guy. I will be the first to tell you, I think that Roman Reigns is needed in WWE because he's become such a staple, but I don't think that he's the greatest wrestler. I know he's not the greatest on the mic. And to be honest, him coming out there and doing his like, you know, his shtick that he does, you know, acknowledge me, like it's gotten super old for me. Like it's really run down. They need to change that up. So for me, Roman Reigns is not professional wrestler of the year. I'm going to go to my tried and my true professional wrestler that I've been able to follow for his career since he started. Well, not since he started, but since AEW come along. And that is Maxwell Jacob Friedman. Maxwell MJF. Jacob Friedman, MJF. He's, you know, I mean, he's Diamond Dallas Page. He's so much, but at the same time, he also can't be compared to these guys. His wrestling skills, when he first was coming to AEW, Jay, you remember, he was a little chunky. He was a little bit slow in the ring, but he had mic skills, and that's what kept him around. That's what started getting him. His mic skills were off the chains, off the charts good. And then he started going through this crazy training program, and now all of a sudden he's just chiseled from bottom to top. And not only is he now got the body of the professional wrestler of the year, but he's always had the mouth of a professional wrestler of the year. And he's been in big matches to also be considered by hopefully many more than just myself to be professional wrestler of the year. His matches with Daniel Bryan and all the, or Bryan Danielson, excuse me, who, by the way, I would actually like to say he's probably a close second. That man's matches, mm-hmm. His record over the last year has been insane. The matches he's been in with the guys he's been in with those matches against the types of matches that they've been. Bryan Danielson has really, really shown in AEW professional wrestler that guy is. Like, he's not just your yes, yes, yes guy. Like, that's all fun and games. I get it. But he is a hardcore, passionate about this sport guy. But not to take sights off the man, MJF, he is my guy. I put together the matches. His matches have all been just fantastic. His mic skills, his promos. Oh God, don't get me started on his promos. The guy is a king. Okay. You think CM Punk is good, and Punk is good. But Maxwell Jacob Friedman has some outrageous promos. I'm telling you, he's my guy.
I'm going to go all over the place here because I love all of these takes. But I'd start with Roman Reigns because I think for me, Roman Reigns is an incredible sports entertainer and a top-tier platinum-level sports entertainer. And he wrestles the perfect WWE match now. Every match he wrestles, it feels like the same match, give or take 3 to 5 minutes. And they're always entertaining matches. So, like, you got to give him his credit for that. The Sami Zayn match he wrestled this year was entertaining. The Cody match was entertaining. The match he had with the Uso brother was entertaining. Like, he's in entertaining matches to me. But they're always the same matches. And for me personally, the best WWE wrestler, and I don't equate this to the best wrestler in my opinion or the wrestler of the year, but the best WWE wrestler right now is Walter. I think he's just fucking unbelievable, and he's every match he's in is entertaining. Every match he's in is hard hitting. I'm always intrigued whenever Walter's on. I'm never changing the TV.
And also another good promo guy.
Yeah, but not as good. But to his credit, he's not in English isn't his first language. So he still does the thing where he hears English, has to translate it in his brain, and then spit his own promo out and make it sound, you know, credible to Americans. It's difficult. He's got an uphill battle, but I just think he's fucking fantastic. I would say Daniel Bryanson, whichever way we're going, it's him versus MJF is my match of the year. I thought that was the best. The 60-minute Iron Man match, that match to me was the best match of the year. And that's hard for me to say because I was convinced January 11th or 12th or whenever it was when Ospreay and Omega had their first match in New Japan, that was going to be the match of the year. I was like, this is the best match of the year. I don't care if it's the first week of January. There's nothing that's going to fucking top this. The bar is set, and it's just going to be difficult to beat. And I think when you take the story plus the match plus everything that was involved with the MJF versus Danielson, that was it for me. That was the match of the year. With that said, Jess, I was really hoping I could deflect, or I was hoping you'd go another way, because this definitely isn't me zagging. But to me, MJF is the pro wrestler of the year.
I think
it's a combination of he is the best promo in the industry right now. I think it's impossible I don't think there's anyone better at him in a promo right now. There might be some guys that might be able to get a little bit of
remember
a
the
pop.
I quit promo. I mean, dude, literally caused emotional stirs.
If you're talking about the one in LA, I was in the building for that. In the building for that. So, but it's not to me, and I've been thinking this. It's not one specific MJF promo that makes me go, he cut this promo, and this promo was above and beyond the promo we're going to remember for the next 10 years. It was just his consistency every week to cut a killer fucking promo. Now, I do believe this. I do believe he's a little oversaturated right now. There's a lot of MJF. They've been giving us a lot of spoonfuls. They've been giving us spoonfuls of MJF for like six weeks now, which is like 12 shows. And it may have been longer than that. When you mix in the Devil stuff, the Wardlow stuff, the tag team stuff, the Adam Cole stuff, and Adam Cole's not even there anymore.
I love the Adam Cole stuff.
There's a lot of MJF, but I will say this. You talk about the Bryan Danielson match, the CM Punk match, those were this year. The Darby Allin Jungle Boy Sammy Guevara four-way match. That was fucking great.
Hangman Swerve that just happened.
He's been in so many great matches. MJF this year has been in so many great January to December matches. The Adam Cole match, where you just go, damn, dude, like he's really good January to December. It's difficult for me to say someone has been as good for the consistency for so long. There's nobody. There's been Ospreay, who's had great stretches, and of course there's been Rollins, who's been relatively consistent all year. But I think Rollins and Cody's kind of fallen into this as well. They wrestle the same match. You're not getting, you're going to get a very safe WWE sports entertainment match. And this is me seeing Seth wrestle live this year, me watch him on, whether it's his Raw matches, which are short, or his matches that are on pay-per-views, which are, they gave him 20, 25 minutes. He just seems to wrestle the same match, which is cool and is what it is. I'm going MJF, and I think you and I are on the same page here. So,
real quick, since we're on the topic of professional wrestling, off the top of your dome, give me your thought on up-and-coming professional wrestler. Like, who's caught your eye?
I'm in absolute love, and it may be too late now. I'm in absolute love with Willow Nightingale. I've been tweeting about Willow for like over a year, and since she was wrestling on Dark. And it's interesting for me to see the progression of Willow Nightingale and the progression of Julia Hart, because they both went from girls that you'd see on Dark, those year one individuals you'd see on AEW Dark, to now wrestling on Collision every Saturday, or wrestling on Rampage every Friday. They get a ton of time. With regards to the males, I mean, it doesn't everybody love Dom? I think Dirty Dom's going to be really interesting. I believe his name is Axiom. There's the wrestler in NXT. I believe his name is Axiom. And I believe this guy is fucking incredible. I haven't watched a ton of his matches. I've watched maybe a handful. But I'm watching this dude, and I'm like, this dude is badass. Yeah, Axiom. He's an NXT wrestler. Yeah. So I haven't seen a ton of them. Only seen a handful of matches. But I love the idea of and they're doing this with Dragon Lee as well. They're doing this with Dragon Lee. I believe he's I know he's on NXT. I think maybe he's on SmackDown or Raw a little bit now. Where the WWE is doing a great job of incorporating the Lucha style into like a hybrid of that sports entertainment style. I think they're doing a great job doing that. As opposed to you watch Penta, you watch, Serpentico and guys like this, and they're just like, no, we're just going full Lucha on you, like Lucha fucking on speed. We're just going Lucha level 10. Which I love. I love that. That's why I think AEW is awesome, because they are that alternative where you're not getting like a hybrid Lucha sports entertainment style. You're getting like, no, this is just a Lucha. This guy's just, that's his style is Lucha, and it's badass.
No, this is why, especially this year, because AEW has been around now for a good couple, solid years. And this year, there was a lot of blossoming of in-house superstars, we really saw MJF take that first step, that first leap into not just stardom, but just like superstardom, like Stone Cold Steve Austin type, you know, 316 promo really broke loose Stone Cold Steve Austin, right? Like everybody heard that and they're like,
they gave him the ball and they let him run.
And MJF has had the opportunity to work for a company who sees something in him. And he and Tony Khan, our boy TK, has basically had talks, and I'm sure other people involved in the, you know, the storylines. And MJF is like, you guys let me run with shit, and I will make superstars out of each and every person in this locker room, because he can do no wrong on the mic. And literally the entertainment part is the mic first. Like wrestling is second, right? Like I look for the storylines. Like how believable is the storyline? Is it personal? Is it, you know, is it something that's like totally out of this atmosphere, crazy? Like, you know, when the Undertaker is crucifying Stone Cold Steve Austin on a cross.
Is it Undertaker like, space, fucking the lights go off and go on type shit?
Yeah, like 100%, right? So
and this is where Jess, and now we're really deep. This is where I think AEW is lacking the most right now, is the storyline telling, is the actual, the out of the ring stuff. Because the in-ring stuff is fantastic, and I think that they have great matches every week. And that's where I come away from every AEW episode, is like I can say every week there's a great match. There's a good, great, or a five-star match every week where you just go like, damn, that was fucking amazing. That was cool. But I do think that the storytelling, if you will,
the storyline is struggling. One thing that I will have to pull back the reins on is the fact that they are still such a young company, and yes, they've blown up quick with so many names and so many people, and no, I don't like them chasing, you know, contract chasing these old ass aged out WWE guys. I don't like that. But Khan has been smart for the most part. I'll give him that as a businessman. He has been smart for the most part about how he uses these aged up, aged out ex-WWE guys. Like, take for example,
I think it depends
on
who you're talking about.
Sting is 75 years old, folks. He's jumping off fucking tables and shit and ceilings. And Tony Khan's basically letting this guy, like, you know, Sting, I think Sting's like 52. He's saying, like, hey, you're not going to be the face, right? You're not going to be the guy. Like, Darby is the guy you're helping build. And Sting, being the company man he has always been, says, you know what? I like this kid. I like what he's got. I like the energy. Let's fucking go. And Sting is all about bringing up Darby. And it's fucking brilliant when you have that kind of stuff come together.
I think it'll be interesting to see what they do in 2024, because you've got a great point. They brought in talent from other places, older talent, and they've done a good job of mentoring guys or knowing the role, if you will, where it comes to, I'm going to come in, I'm going to lose to this guy. You know, for every Edge, you know, there might be like an Andrade, where it's like, well, what are they doing with this guy? For every, you know, Danielson, there's like a Miro, or like, well, what are they doing with this guy? But I think at the end of the day, where it does get interesting in 2024 is, do they keep that belt on MJF? And if they do not, are they putting it on a next WWE talent, whether an older guy like Samoa Joe or a younger guy like, I don't know, I can't think of anyone off the top of my head right now. Or are they going to put it on, or like, let's say, a Jay White, or are they going to put it on a Will Hobbs? Are they going to put it on the actual AEW, a Jungle Boy, a Jungle Jack, a fucking, or a Darby, or their actual in-house talent that are year one or year two AEW guys, and not necessarily guys that were brought in from the WWE? Because there's more than a handful of those guys.
Yes. Yes. So I'm going to give you, this is what I would like to see happen. Kenny Omega's on the shelf for a bit. It's been said, you know, on the news and media, he just had surgery. I believe it was for diverticulitis, which is the same thing that kept Brock Lesnar out of MMA and professional wrestling for quite some time. So Omega's on the shelf for an unknown amount of time. Well, you know what? There's another kid. And I don't mean kid as in young, but there's another guy out there. His name is Will Ospreay. And for years now, he has been touted as the most talented professional wrestler in the world. And this is not by accident. He is a very, very talented guy. The only hard part for me that I feel would be difficult for him to get over is his accent. Like, it's super thick. It's going to be super difficult for him to get over with the American fans.
And yes, you've heard me say this before. I'm a big believer in if they're going to take that belt and give it to anybody next and let them run with it, I think you give it to Takeshka. I think you let Takeshka get that belt. He's an amazing wrestler. He's an amazing talent. He can wrestle the best matches. And just let Don Callis be that heel. Let him.
Kind of like the mean days in WWE.
Be fucking Yokozuna. Yokozuna.
There you go.
And fucking Mr. Fuji and whoever is fucking, you don't have to cut a promo. You don't have
Howard Finkel.
Just let them fucking Finkel the Dinkle. Just let them be the fucking guys that are cutting the promo for you. But you got Don Callis, one of the most hated guys in wrestling. When he walks the ring, guy gets monster heat. Let him put the belt on him. And to me, that's more of an AEW tier talent. Yeah, I know he came from some promotion in Japan, but it doesn't matter. He's always going to be looked at as a non-WWE guy. Put the belt on someone like that as opposed to just putting it on a WWE guy or a retread WWE.
I do not want to see Edge get the AEW World Championship belt.
I don't want to see him get the TNT.
I love his persona here in AEW. I think I actually enjoy it more because he can be a little bit freer. He's a little bit more open with dialogue and stuff. I like that.
Yeah.
But I don't want to see him get anything. I want to see him kind of ride out this wave and then eventually just kind of like, do what like a Sting did, where maybe he takes a guy and he mentors a guy and they have some feuds with people and then eventually he leaves. And real quick, last thought for me on this wrestling stuff, which has been fun to talk about. I want to see the WWE do something big with my guy, Austin Theory. I think Austin Theory is potentially the most talented athlete in the WWE. He's got mic skills. He's hated. I bet you could turn him face real quick, and people love the fuck out of that guy. But people also love to hate that guy.
I think there's a lot of that.
I think they've already kind of screwed things up with the whole John Cena thing. I do enjoy the fact that Cena, again, probably the most company man of any professional wrestler in the history of professional wrestling, laid down for Theory. I think that's great, right? But John Cena does that for guys. But they need to bring this man to the pinnacle. Austin Theory has the look. He's got the sound. He's got the attitude. This kid could bring you some crazy hype in 2024 and also along with some really, really fun matchups. Austin Theory is the guy that, as far as WWE is concerned, that I am hoping to see more of this next year.
I think it'll be interesting to see what they do in the WWE. And I swear it's the last wrestling take. I think it's going to be interesting to see what they do in 2024 because you have the Punk thing, which is clearly moving the needle.
Yeah. He's a needle mover.
You've got the Cody and Roman thing. You've got a lot you can do with the Judgment Day. And then you've got a shrew of young talent like Walter, like Theory, who you just mentioned, a lot of guys they can bring up from NXT that are all
Ron Breaker. Give that guy a shot.
Nipping at the heels to get on TV. And then if WWE decides to do something wild, like go, hey, we're just going to overpay Okada. Lord, and now all of a sudden you go, damn, they've got Okada, they've got Cody Rhodes, they've got, they're doing that. I think 2024 is going to be very interesting. Again, I said it to start the segment, I'll say it to end the segment. I think pro wrestling right now is hotter than ever, and I don't see it cooling down yet. Now, maybe we'll get 6-9 months into the year. Maybe Roman fucks around and beats Cody again, and then people are like, fuck that, we're not watching this anymore. Who knows? Time will tell. We got 4 or 5 months for WrestleMania. But, Jess, enough of the pro wrestling talk. Let's talk the real fake fighting. Let's talk UFC 296.
We're going from the squared circle to the steel cage. Let's do this.
Jazz, one thing that you and I said, and of course I was not right. I don't know if you went all in. But one thing we said last week is we said, you know, don't be surprised, ladies and gentlemen, if Josh Emmett just knocks Bryce Mitchell out cold, because he's got knockout power in that right hand. He's got knockout power in that left hook. I thought Bryce Mitchell would win. I thought he would lose the round, go on to win the next two. And I was very wrong, Jess. They had a fill-out moment, and then both guys threw, and Josh landed square on Bryce's chin, and Bryce went to sleep something ugly. Jess, give me a few seconds on this fight.
I feel like he punched through Bryce's brain.
That's a great analysis.
It was one of the hardest punches.
That's the best analysis I've heard
in a long time. Like, we've all seen some really hard kick knockouts and punch knockouts. That was just like the full momentum of Emmett coming in with, I believe, the left hand. And Bryce Mitchell coming in full on, you know, from the opposite side, coming in trying to land a punch of his own. Like, when it met, like, Emmett's hand and Bryce's face, like, yeah, his body kept moving forward, but his head, like, stood still. It was like, oh, shit, I can't go anywhere.
That was so bad.
And then, of course, there was the bad, you know, like, after effect of that. But you know what? Knockouts are not pretty, folks. They're not pretty.
Yes, let me say this. How many fights have you seen where a guy gets knocked out cold and then they go to a camera angle so fucking wide, it's like they're showing the crowd, they're showing Dana, they're showing the fighter walking around the cage, but you're not seeing anything below his waist?
Yeah.
Why is it they made it? I almost felt like they made it a point to let you see Bryce fucking go into a seizure.
That's,
because he went into a fucking seizure, Jess. There's no other way to describe what was going on there. I honestly, I know I tweeted about it, but my jaw was on the floor because I'm not sure who the editor or who was backstage producing that fight that said, fuck it, show it. Because I feel like they've always done a great job of protecting fighters from anybody seeing that specific moment. Because when you see that, that's the moment where people say, well, this fucking fight isn't safe. This is human cockfighting. When people see that, I feel like those are the knockouts that are used against the sport, not pro for the sport. So just a little bit surprising to me for the UFC to show that, Jess.
No, I agree with you on that.
We'll keep it moving. Yeah. Tony Ferguson versus Paddy Pimblett. Absolute mama mid fight, but I do want to give Tony Ferguson some credit. This is one of those weird things where it's like, you give him credit for him sticking around, not necessarily him, not getting knocked out. Right? That's what we didn't get knocked out, so because he didn't get knocked out, you got to give him some credit, give him some daps for that.
For sure. No, Tony, so like you said, man, like not much to say about this fight. Absolutely mid. I think that sometimes when you lose, you get highlighted more than the winner. And I think that this would be close to one of those situations. Like, Tony is clearly, in my opinion, and I'm a nobody, in my opinion, Tony is done. Like, he needs to retire. He needs to just be a spectator. He can be a coach or just sit in the stands and watch. I don't know. But he needs to be done before his health becomes severe. Obviously much slower. Obviously the age thing is you know, just the amounts of fights he's had and the brutality of those fights. That's one thing people forget to mention. They're like, oh, guy was in 37 fights. They all went to, you know, like whatever. Tony's been in a lot of fights, and for a lot of those fights, they've been very brutal on both ends. Him or, you know, giving it to somebody else, very brutal fights. And a body just can't take that for such a long time. That's why in the world of MMA, it's a very, very short lifespan, much like the lifespan of a running back in the NFL. Think about it like that, right? So for me, I'm happy that Tony didn't get knocked out. Paddy really fucking put the boots to him in that first round. That first round was expecting Tony to go out.
He got messy Tony at made the it end, through. Like the last minute. He was on the ground. He's getting –
yeah.
It was like he wasn't just him getting defending stuff. It was more like, oh, he's taking a bit of a beat.
He's just getting hit. But he made it through.
It's like old school ground and pound.
He made it through. And then it went to all three rounds. And this is where it gets sticky for me, because like you and I don't believe we like Patty, but I believe that you and I both have spoke about him before and said he's just not ready for that upper echelon competition. And this fight to me proves that he is not fucking ready for the top.
That's a good take.
I do not think I like Patty. And yep. He comes off as like an arrogant prick, but if you listen to him, he's not that bad actually. Like he's just kind of spits his own truth a little bit, and he'll talk some shit a little bit. But you know what, the guy, he's European. That's the way he handles his business, and like he's not necessarily being super disrespectful. He's just talking his shit, and I'm okay with that. Patty's also not a bad fighter. He's a very talented young man. I think that he does have a bright career ahead of him in this sport. But as of right now, I have not seen these leaps and bounds of getting better. And barely edging out Tony Ferguson at this point in time in his career, I don't think that's something to hang on the wall.
That's a really good take. That's a great perspective. You know what? This is one of those fights where you and I both thought Patty should finish, because this is trending up, allegedly, versus trending all the way down. And it shouldn't be a scenario where it's like, I think what I was reaching for earlier was like the participation trophy. You know, it's like, well, I made it all three rounds. So that to me is like, it's a moral victory because I didn't get finished, as opposed to my last four fights, I was knocked out or submitted. I don't think that's good for Patty. I think that you're right. I think for where he's at in his career, you would expect a little bit more growth. He came in highly touted. He came in with a lot of a juice, if you will. But this might be one of those things where he is who he truly is. He might always be a middle of the pack competitor. I need to see more, Jess. That's kind of where I'm at. I think Dana's in a unique position too, because he doesn't want to sage nor cut him, right? Where you go, all right, you wear him thin too fast and then you can't use him anymore. You know, he is a commodity. He sells a lot of tickets overseas. He is a needle mover. So because of that, you got to be careful and be selective with the fights, if you will. But you are correct. With regards to like any stake, I don't think anyone's running to go, buy more stock in Patty Pimblett advancing to a championship anytime soon. I think at some point you got to truly stick him into that 10 to 5 pack and see how he does against the 7th or the 8th or the 9th ranked competitor in that division. I don't think Tony was ranked anywhere in the top 10, was he?
If he was 8, 9, 10. I think if anything, he was maybe top 15, but that's just because they didn't have no one else to put up there.
Yeah, it's like you just, at some point you run into names, but at some point you got to stick him in there with someone in that middle echelon, that top 10 to 12. Jess, let's keep it moving here. Oh, and by the way, I agree with you. Tony should retire, but it doesn't sound like he's going to. I think he was tweeting some more stuff. Ramanov. Jess.
Rachmanov, yeah.
Did we both pick a finish? Did we both pick
no,
a finish?
No, you know what? I picked Steven. I picked Wonderboy to win this fight.
Yeah, that was ballsy.
And it did not go my way, my friend. You were on the button. You even did predict. You even did predict a finish in this fight.
I picked the choke. Yeah. You know, credit to Wonder Boy. He fought a smart fight for the first round or so. You know, he tried to. He didn't let him. He didn't let Rachmanov take true cage control. Like, he did a great job of keeping it on his feet. They did that bump up against the cage where they were both just kind of, I don't want to say stalling on the cage and trying to grapple for position, which leads to a boring fight. But there wasn't a ton of movement in the first round. To me, it wasn't great action in the first round. It's pretty stale. And then in the second round, Rachmanov just kept working, got that takedown, and just was able to show his great grappling skill, got the submission late in the second round. I'm interested in seeing what they do with Rachmanov. I don't think he's truly ready for, a championship position yet. But if they want to throw him in there against that top five, I feel like Wonderboy is that, 5 to 8 position, maybe if not higher. I don't know the rankings in front of me, but Rachmanov did what Pimblett didn't, which is looked very impressive against the guy that he should have. Give me some thoughts on this one, Jess.
No, man, he did what he was supposed to do, you know. The first round was a feel out round, and Rachmaninoff typically isn't he's not a slow starter, but he will allow a feel out period. And I think when you're fighting a guy, and let's just call it what it is, it's an awkward martial arts. Like his karate style is very awkward. It's difficult to get a grasp on, like, at first. So I think that shows ring IQ by Rachmaninoff as well.
Yep.
To kind of give that chance to kind of feel it out, see what Wonderboy is going to come at him with. And then the second round, he got more physical. He definitely became the aggressor. He got the takedown, and he got the big finish. Rachmaninoff, to me, if who I would like to see him fight next is either Chimaev, or I think a lot of people are looking to see him fight Bilal Muhammad. Bilal would be great, right? But I think that he beats the shit out of Bilal. I'm just going to tell you the truth. I think he beats the shit out of Bilal. I think it's a bad matchup for Bilal. Rachmaninoff, way too many tools in that tool belt. Way too aggressive. I don't think Bilal has a way to deal with that, at least outside of that first round, right? I think Chimaev is the true test. I don't want to see him get thrown into the title mix too fast, but you know what, man? Fucking good fighters who win a lot of fights, they sell big pay-per-views. Yeah. I would not put it past me, Dana, just salivating at putting this guy in a title fight.
Would you be surprised if they had him fight Colby?
Dude, he'd beat the shit out of Colby.
I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying, would you be surprised?
You know what? I heard or was reading through Twitter that somebody was complaining, a Colby fan, said that Colby had possibly broken his foot within the first minute of the first round, right? So maybe if there is an excuse to be made that could be legitimate, maybe you say, okay, heal up. Come fight, you know, Shavkat. Let's see what happens, right? I mean, I can see it happen. I would not prefer to see Rachmaninoff fight somebody outside of that top five, but, you know, it is what it is.
I think Colby's technically still top five, even if he's number five. He might be five, but he's still got to be in the top five. Raw Dog, my boy Raw Dog, against Pantoja. I think we both picked Pantoja here. I think I pick submission in the fourth round, and Pantoja damn near had it. He had him in some. He was twisting and twirling my boy Raw Dog like a pretzel there for a few rounds. Jess, give me some thoughts on this fight.
This was a really fun fight. I think we both said that this was going to be, you know, potentially fight of the night. And I think that both these guys let it all go, man. There was a little bit of wrestling. There's a little bit of submission attempts. There's takedowns. There was big punches, big kicks. Both these guys really showed that they're truly, truly talented in this weight class. True talents, true athletes. Alexandre Pantoja, he had this, what I was saying about him earlier. I said, he's the champ. You got to beat the champ to be the champ. And I just don't think the Raw Dog had it in him. Pantoja, he literally got to that champion, those championship rounds. And that's when you saw like that light bulb click. And he's like, fuck, man, I don't know if I'm up. I don't know if I'm down, but you know what? I'm not losing this fight. I'm the guy. He's got to beat me. And so he took the fight to Raw Dog. And that's what I really liked about, you know, that's what I want out of my champions. You know, I don't want them like slow playing that last couple rounds. Like I want, if you're the champ, baby, you're representing this sport. You're the champion. You wear the belt. Get in there and take that shit, man. Finish that fight, go hard, whatever you got to do. Make sure that you leave no ideations of that you may have lost that fight. Leave nothing to think that you did not win that fight. And Alexandra Pantoja did that. He went in there and he took that fight.
Raw Dog striking is just so good. He's just such a great striker. And it just, I don't know how much weight Pantoja cuts. But he's just so strong, and he just seems so much stronger than Raw Dog when they got to grappling. And there was a strong minute in the fourth round where I was like, he's going to finish Raw Dog right now. It's right there. He's wearing him down. And credit to Raw Dog. Credit to Rival for just sticking around. And that's what you got to do in these championship fights. Just stick around, stick around. I hope you can catch him late. I thought he definitely was the aggressor when they stood. The problem was there wasn't enough standing for him to really win any of these rounds. It felt like when Pantoja wanted to take him down, he could. And when Pantoja wanted to create control on the ground, he did. And pass guards, he did. And He's just so good on the ground. He's going to be very tough for anyone in that division to beat, especially if he's cutting a ton of weight, which I think he, in my opinion, I think he is. He just looks so much bigger and so much stronger. I don't know. Maybe it's one of those things where Royval just fights at this weight because it's more of a natural weight for him.
It looks like it fits his body type a little bit better, like less to cut, you know, like he can. Because Royval looks strong at this weight class. Like, don't get me wrong, Pantoja looked.
Pantoja's just a fucking next level grappler. But that's really all it is. And Royval's a great grappler too. But Pantoja's just fucking next level. Like, it's unbelievable what he was able to do that night. He's gonna be a tough out for anyone to take that belt. I'll tell you right now, Jess. The bottom line, we got to run Moreno back. Bring Moreno back, baby. Give me Moreno Pantoja.
I'll watch Moreno fight anytime.
Give me Moreno Pantoja 2. Do it in Mexico.
You know what? Throw all three in the ring. We're going to have our first triple threat fucking lightweight championship match.
Get Figgy to drop 10 pounds.
Oh, shit.
And now we're doing that three-way. That's a wicked three-way.
Hell yes.
All right. Let's talk about the championship fight. Let's talk about how Colby no-showed, but didn't have the balls to get on the mic at the end of the fight. And thank the hardworking first responders. Jess, give me some thoughts on this fight.
I'm going to go with this. I don't know about no injury. I didn't hear any official word on that. So I'm just going to say this. When you have a layoff as long as Colby has, it's tough to come back in, especially for a championship fight. And Leon Edwards has been active. He's been an active champion. And he has fought some absolute animals in that weight class. And he's beaten them. And so, including Kamaru Usman,
twice.
So, give all credit to Leon Edwards for fighting a very, very smart fight. The best thing about his fight technique was him holding back his emotions long enough to make sure that the game plan went according to plan. He did not let himself get outside the lines. He did not scribble out. He didn't start, you know, getting pissed and angry and upset and just trying to throw shit. He stuck within the game plan. He stuck within the lines, and that's what won him this fight. Colby looked slow. His footwork was not as good or as crisp as we've seen in the past. His hands were very slow. They looked heavy. I think that cardio was definitely an issue. He did not look like he was, you know, necessarily sucking wind, but he was sucking some wind. And Leon is fast. He's in shape. And, man, I'm telling you, Leon Edwards is – he's at the top right now, man. I don't know where Leon goes after all this, right? Because where he's at right now is prime. I don't know how long he's got to be there. But right now, it's fucking enjoyable to watch that man fight.
Jess, I'm going to give you three names, and you already mentioned three of them. Three names. Are you ready?
Let's go.
Chimaev, Rakhmov, who we just talked about, and Bilal Muhammad. Who do you want to see Leon fight right now of those three?
I think most deserving is Bilal. I think Chimaev would be the toughest fight for him, but the fight that I would like to see most is Rakhmov. Just entertainment value, man.
Him and Rakhmov would be fucking fireworks.
Fireworks.
All right, so let's say this, Jess. I thought that Edwards won every round but the last round, and the only reason he lost the last round was because he wanted to try and grapple. And he wanted to try and prove to Colby that he could out-grapple him the same way that he proved it to Usman, that he could out-grapple him. And he put himself in positions where he was never in any real trouble, but he put himself in bad positions. And that's why he lost a round in that fight. But other than that, he did whatever he wanted. He controlled the fight. Colby fought tentatively. He fought scared. Everything that made him a badass, he did the opposite of. Where was his where was the relentlessness? Where was the fire? Where was the guy that would put you in a meat grinder? Where was the guy that put you up against the cage and made you fight? Where was the guy that made you hesitant because you didn't know if he was going to take you down, then he would hit you with, you know, that the southpaw shit? There was none of that. There was none of it. And now let me say this, Jess, as well. There were a lot of people that were quick to bury Colby after this fight. He's a bum. He's this. He's that.
He's not a bum. Come on.
No, and this is my point. And I understand if you're passionate about hating Colby, because we talked about it last week. He's a habitual line stepper, and he says shit that doesn't promote fights. It just comes off as cringe and makes him look like a prick and an asshole. And that it just it's all bad.
Followed by all the Trump stuff. I get
and,
it.
And if you're not a Trump, and even if you're a Trump supporter, I feel like it's hard to support Colby when
bit.
He says some of the shit that he says. But he's not a bum. He'd give a lot of guys in the top 10 fits. He'd beat a lot of the guys 6 through 10. And even though he would probably lose to Islam. He would probably lose to the other individuals that we just mentioned. I just lost everybody's names right now. Where the hell did they go?
I don't know. I don't know if he loses to Bilal. Bilal is a weird...
I don't know.
I'm not sure where he's
But he loses,
at,
to,
exactly.
he loses to Rakhmonov. We
but
just said right now, Rakhmonov would kill him. Kimaev would kill him.
Beats
Kimaev
him to the ground.
Killed him.
Yeah.
Gilbert Burns?
I think that'd be a fun fight.
I think Gilbert Burns beats his fucking ass. That's what I think. So he's in a really unique position because I think he's in that point of his career where Dana's going to put him in one, and not necessarily a loser leaves town match, but a match where he's fed to a Bilal or a Rakhmonov or a Chimaev. And those are tough fucking fights for him. He'd be lucky if he can get the Burns fight, because if he shows up at that Burns fight with the Colby that we've seen in the past, he gives Burns a ton of fits and might finish him if it's 5 rounds. But I question Burns' gas tank. But I don't know. Time will tell, Jess. Time will tell. Listen, we've spent a ton of time on the card. We love talking combat sports. We love talking pro wrestling, Jess. We're going to keep it moving. We're going to keep it light and tight. I have our NFL spreads up. I believe there's a Thursday game going on right now, Jess. Is there a Thursday game going on right now? I'm nowhere by a television, so apologies.
I'm guessing the Saints and Rams.
Yeah, do you see the score by any chance or no? Because I don't want to. Should we even do that game? If it's being played right now, who cares, right? I'm afraid to check Twitter because I don't want to get kicked off of fucking Spotify trying to tape this.
I'm just gonna say Rams are up 7-0 right now.
All right, well, spread's 4, so I think we can both say confidently we are both geniuses and love the 4 and love the Rams. Let's get into some of these, unless you like the Saints, which I doubt highly. Right, you know, like Saints.
No, if we were doing this beforehand, I totally would have picked the Rams.
All right, let's keep it.
And I would have taken the points.
Let's keep it moving. There's games Saturday. There's games Sunday. There's games Friday. Is tomorrow the 23rd? Do the Bills play tomorrow? Saturday.
This Saturday.
All right. Okay.
Not tomorrow, but next day.
Okay. Fucking threw me off. Wow. We're gonna
Bengals.
We're gonna get into the fucking. So let's do this. Let's start with your Bills game, because let's get right through the bullshit, right? Got a lot of people listening to the show waiting for this take specifically. So shout out to you listeners who are waiting to laugh at me right now, because it's time. Fucking turn up your volume. So Jess, we're gonna start with the Buffalo Bills tonight. They're a 12.5-point favorite across the road. They are traveling to the Los Angeles Chargers. So East traveling West. Don't know if I love that. I'm assuming this point spread is a little bit larger coming off of the complete ass whooping that the Bills handed to the Dallas Cowboys Sunday. So look out there, Jess. You and I both picked Dallas to win.
Yes.
I love the spread. I can't remember if you love the spread or not. Buffalo.
I think that I took Dallas, and the spread was 2.5 for Buffalo. So yeah. I was like, yeah, Dallas covers like
easily. Buffalo came out and just systematically ran the ball. It felt like an old school NFC East game to me. It just felt so Giants Eagles from like the 90s, the late 80s. Parcells Giants just pounding the fucking rock. They kept running to the left, and it kept working like you wouldn't believe. I don't know if we're going to chalk this up to Cowboys getting caught off guard, Cowboys coming off of the high of beating the Eagles. I don't know what we're chalking this one up to, Jess. I will tell you what I chalk it up to here in a moment, but give me some thoughts on what you saw.
My biggest take of this game, well, I have two big takes that I witnessed in this. First is Josh Allen was like 9 of 16 for, I believe, 94, 95 yards.
Yeah, his numbers felt pretty
relevant. He didn't even hit 100 yards. And the reason that's a big deal is because if Josh Allen can't hit 100, Bills are losing really bad, or he got hurt and he's not playing. The reason he did not hit 100 yards is because James Cook and the offensive line absolutely took over this football game. And they basically made it, like you said, like a 1995 version of Eagles versus Giants, where it was like whose offensive line is going to be biggest and baddest and who's going to push who around the most. And I honestly, I'm super surprised. Obviously, I'm in love with the outcome. You know what I mean? A win over Dallas is huge. Dallas is up there in that top, you know, looking for those top, that top seed over there in the East. And Buffalo's over here in the NFC. Buffalo's over in the AFC, just struggling to try to get a wild card spot. So a win, regardless, you know, is huge though. But the way that they won is absolutely crazy to me, because for the past 6 years, we've seen basically Josh Allen throw more pass attempts than any other quarterback in the NFL in his time since he's been in the NFL. He throws the football. That's the basis of the Buffalo Bills offense, is him throwing the football as many times as he can. In this game, he threw the ball less than 20 times. He completed, you know, a fair percent of those passes, but he didn't need to do any more. James Cook and the offensive line took over and they ran. And James Cook looks like, you know, he looks like somebody that could really be breaking out as far as at the running back position. The guy can run. Obviously, he's, you know, got great, like, I don't want to say great. He's got really good eyesight. Like, he can see the hole. He makes those decisions quick. His brain processes really fast. And he can also go out for the pass, which he did some of that also. The guy had over 220 all-purpose yards. It was an insane game for the young man. So congratulations to James Cook and the Buffalo Bills getting that win. The biggest kudos of the night that I have to give is to brand new OC Joe Brady. Now, before Brady, you heard me talk a lot of shit and ask for Ken Dorsey to get fired week after week.
Yes. Head on a platter every week.
On a platter. Not even a silver one, like a dirty-ass rusty one. Just put it on and send them out. Joe Brady was asked, why did you ever feel like you needed James Cook to do this? Was Josh Allen, like, where was your head? And Joe Brady said, it was working, so I decided why do something else? Why fix what's not broken? And I was like, holy shit, man. Like, it's simple, but it's smart, right? Like, if you're crushing somebody with the run game or the pass game or to a certain receiver beating a corner all the time or whatever it is, and the defense can't figure out how to stop that, why go away from it? We see it happen all the time. And I've seen plenty of it in Buffalo. And yep. So for once in an OC's career in Buffalo, they made the decision, hey man, as long as Cook, Latavius Murray, and for fuck's sake, Ty Johnson, you know, can run the football, we're going to let him run the football. And they did. And it ended up being a big win for the Bills.
I think that, you know, the keep it simple, stupid applied across the board here. And, you know, you see it at the lowest level football games. And I mean like peewee games or middle school games or high school games, college games, where they go, we're going to just keep running this play until you stop it. And then we'll run something else. We're going to run a variation of this until you guys adjust, and if you don't adjust, we're just going to keep doing it. And I think you've brought up a great point, which is sometimes a lot of OCs, they want to get cute and go, oh, this is working, so let's try and trick them and do something different. Nah, that's not working. Just keep doing what fucking works until it doesn't work anymore. And as a Cowboys fan, to see the Niners running us the way they did in that loss, the Eagles running us the way they did in that loss, Arizona running us the way they did in that loss, and now Buffalo, it is concerning as all fuck. And I think every pundit that said, yeah, we're taking the Cowboys off of that top tier and sliding them right back into that second tier. I think rightfully so. When we did our last show or the show before last, I made it a point to say I'd hate to see Buffalo in the playoffs because Josh Allen has that it factor. You never know when he's going to turn into prime Brett Favre. Plus, they've got some pieces on defense. They can figure it out. And now I wonder if even Dallas can claim stake to something like that. Because I think when you get ran on like that on the road and you know you're going to have to play road playoff games, that's a fucking recipe for disaster. It's impossible for me to sell myself on, no, they'll figure it out. They'll adjust. And we're, you know, whatever, 3 weeks away from the playoffs. At this point, I'm shifting my hope to Dallas play spoiler for, like, the Eagles. Dallas play spoiler for, like, the Niners. But I have no faith in them.
What do you mean? This week they're going to play spoilers for the Bills, bro.
What I mean is in the playoffs. They win that second round playoff game. They maybe – and then get to the third round and just get throttled. I just can't see them winning – two, possibly three playoff games on the road. I can't see it. I can't. With that said, Jess, we'll do more in-depth Cowboys talk as we get to that game. How are you feeling about this week? Is there a potential letdown game here?
No. And the reason being is that Buffalo, yeah they're going to ride a high off this game for sure. I think that that's going to be helpful. I think there's a couple players that will be coming back from injury status as well. So I believe that Micah Hyde's still not going to play, but our safeties played well against Dallas. And so I think that they'll play well against Easton Stick and whoever the fuck the receiver is, because Keenan Allen has been ruled out for this week's game. So not only do you not have Justin Herbert, Austin Eckler's banged up, but now you've lost your only receiving threat on your offense. This game's going to get ugly. I think it's going to get ugly late. I think the Buffalo's going to put it on. The run game, they're going to show it all. I think they're going to try to put the pedal to the metal as much as possible for these next few games that they have. And what a great game to get after such an emotional run against Dallas, right? You play one of the most beat up football franchises in football. The LA Chargers are,
yep.
They just fired all their coaching staff. Like I said, Herbert's out with he's getting thumb surgery. He's not even going to come back this year. Keenan Allen's not playing. He's beat up. Like I said, Austin Eckler's beat up. The defense is beat up. Khalil Mack's been banged up. I think that this game gets away from him early and Buffalo doesn't look back.
Yeah. To keep it short, and to piggyback off of what you said, this team is hurting, and I mean the Chargers, from up top all the way down. Just a ripple effect. Coaching's fired, coaches fired, GM's fired, quarterback's injured, top wide receivers are injured. This just, the numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster game. I feel comfortable saying the Bills should win by 14. I do believe it'll take them a half to get it figured out. Like, I can see this being like 3-14, you know, 3-17 at halftime, maybe 21-7 at halftime, and then they really turn it up the second half, and then we get whoever the backup is for Josh Allen stepping in sometime late in that third quarter.
Allen, Kyle.
Wait, let's just beat through these games really quick. I don't believe Stroud is playing. 3-point dog at home.
Oh, what about, hey, we're skipping the other Saturday game.
Oh, shit, my bad.
Bengals Steelers.
This has a little bit of juice, but not really. Burrow.
Not as much.
Burrow a 2-point favorite at home. Pittsburgh is starting to really fall apart here. It's like an old tire trying to roll to the end of the race. And once again, I said it at the beginning of the year, Tomlin is going to struggle to break 500. I was out, now I'm back in. I'll tell you right now, Jess, I think this is a loss. I like Cincinnati. I like the points. Who you got?
I like Cincinnati and the points, too. And not only do I like Cincinnati and the points, but Cincinnati wins, and they help Buffalo's playoff chances by basically knocking the Steelers out. So let's go, Bengals. Yeah.
Tomlin not getting fired, but getting questioned more than I've ever seen.
I just want to say I can't believe the responses of people on social media talking about Tomlin's done.
More than that. It's all over TV. It's all over
Tomlin,
the radio.
I'm going to say it right now. He is the Pittsburgh Steelers. You can't fire Tomlin. Wow. He is the Pittsburgh Steelers. There's nothing else attached. There's nothing else to attach to as a fan if you're a fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers, except to your damn head coach, because he's gotten you to the big games. He's won big playoff games. He's won Super Bowls for you. What are you going to do? You attach yourself to Kenny Pickett?
Tomlin
is the Pittsburgh Steelers.
We're spending too much time on bad games, but let me say this.
We are.
They need to go all in on a fucking quarterback, and you need to use Pickett and Pickens as part of trade bait.
Yeah, because Pickens sucks.
But every story I've heard this year is Pickens is a pain in the ass. I've been hearing him all week getting called out for not blocking. He's just bad attitude. I keep hearing all these things, but someone's going to look at him as an incredible talent, and they need a quarterback there. He's got to shake it up, because if shit's going weird in the locker room, then you got to change it up. All right.
Bill Belichick will look differently at him when he's playing for him in LA.
Oh, there it is. 3-point favorite across the board. Cleveland on the road. They're playing Houston. Houston's banged up as well as they cross the finish line. Who you got?
Yeah, I got the Browns. Houston's a little bit too banged up, and they can't play right without Stroud. Last week's game was a fluke.
Agreed. So we're on the same page there.
Shout out to Justin Vaudoum. I do love Case Keenum, but I mean,
and at the end of the day, a really great season, one to hang their hat on. This is not. I hate to say it, but it's another. Hey, we're finishing the season strong. Feels like that's been the Texans' motto the past 3 years. The Detroit Lions and your favorite coach, 3-point favorite across the board. They are playing in Minnesota. Who you got?
Yeah, I don't know what happened to the Vikings. Somewhere in between Josh Dobbs coming in and looking like he was going to provide life and excitement, he's now not. I don't even think he's the quarterback right now. Lions win. I like the points.
Lions should win. The 3 feels easy. Is Goff out or some shit? Lions 3 easily. I like them by 6 or 7 here.
Goff could be.
Green Bay Packers 4.5 across the board. They are on the road. They are playing the Carolina Panthers. Who you got?
I can't choose the Panthers at all. I know they got 2 wins, but I don't know how they got them. I got the Packers. Packers win. I like the points.
Packers on the points easily. Indianapolis Colts, they are. And this surprises me. 2.5-point dog on the road. They're playing the Atlanta Falcons.
Who hates the Colts so much, man? What the hell?
I feel like they're fucking 6,
man. They're like in the same boat, like on the verge of a wild card.
Did our boy get hurt? Minshew's
still. I don't understand what's happening. I do know that there's some internal shit going on. They just released or let go or fired or I don't even know. 2 receivers.
The Colts.
Matter of fact, I heard that the lockers were actually removed. So I'm not.
You talking about Colts?
Yeah, I don't know what happened. And one of those guys was Isaiah McKenzie, who was a Bills fan.
Favorite.
Yeah, McKenzie and another guy. They just got straight scrap. Look it up, man. It's wild because there's like no information on like why
they wanted those fuckers Juju out of the lockers so bad they removed their lockers.
Yeah,
that's a Polian
thing. It is a wild story.
Polian rolled in that fucking locker room all oxycontined out, fucking heard the bad news, and get those fucking lockers the fuck out of here.
They're like, how can you blame us? We got them from Minshew.
I don't care who's
there, man. I like the Colts, and they cover the points. What are you talking about?
Colts win. Colts cover. I feel like, I don't know what's going on with that one. Vegas got lazy here.
Wow, eating too much. Jim Irsay needs to get a hold of shit.
Seattle 3 across the board. They are on the road. They are favorites to the Tennessee Titans. Tennessee Titans, 3-point dogs at home. Who you got?
Titans have been weird, man. Their juice has been up and their juice has been down. I think it all depends on how Levis plays. But in this case, though, I got to stick with Seattle. I do think that Geno or actually maybe Drew will find a way to come through again.
How about Drew Locke? Fucking. summoning John Elway there that last 40 seconds of that Eagles game and just fucking throwing dimes.
That was a hell of a touchdown pass.
Here's a crazy idea. Just throw to Metcalf all the time, and he's going to find ways to make plays. I know that sounds wild, but it works. I like Seattle. I like the points. I don't care which quarterback's in. Here's a battle of terrible teams. The Washington football team, the New York Giants. I'm sorry, the Jets. The Jets are a 3-point favorite at home, Jess. Who you got?
I guess this will be the first upset. I took the Colts. That was the first upset. This will be my second. I think the Commanders win. I think Sam Howell comes back. I think he has a big game through the air. The Jets are really, they ain't got a whole lot going for him. I know that Zach Wilson got a big win for him last week. I don't know how the hell that happened. I don't trust the Jets for nothing. I'm taking the Commanders in the upset.
Can I call this loser leaves town match for the coaches, or I have to wait until after week 8?
I think it's a good time.
If the Jets fuck around and lose this game, this to me is a true sign that Saleh has lost that fucking team and lost that locker room. They can't lose this game. I'm going Jets. I like the points, and this is just because I think Washington is in a ton of trouble. I think they're already in a weird transition on top of a 3-2-1 Cancun. I like the Jets. I like the points. The Jacksonville Jaguars are a 2-point favorite. They are on the road. They are traveling to Tampa Bay and the hottest quarterback in the league, Baker Mayfield, 2-point dog on the road, Jess. Wait a minute. Am I reading that wrong? Wait a minute. I am reading that wrong. Wow.
Yeah, Tampa Bay is not the dog. What the hell?
What the fuck?
Vegas is, they're doing this on purpose to fuck with us, man.
They're on crack. You're saying the same thing. All right. Well, listen.
What has Tampa Bay done? What have they done? That's all I got.
Are they hot late? Do you want to say they're hot late? They got hot late.
Lord.
I like Jacksonville. I like the points.
I like Jacksonville and I like the points too. I don't know what Vegas is thinking right now.
Tampa Bay hot late and Baker is playing well.
For fuck's sake.
Oh, hey, Baker did the same thing that I said that Seattle should do. You have incredibly talented receivers. If you throw the ball deep, they're going to make plays. Crazy how that works.
Yeah, I know. Weird, huh?
battle of absolute terrible, Jess. You're not allowed to spend 5 seconds on this game. The Chicago Bears, 4-point favorites across the board. They're playing the Arizona Cardinals. Who you got?
I got the Bears. Bears and the points.
I go opposite here. I think Kyler wins this game like Arizona.
That'd be great. I like Kyler.
I'm gonna come back to the Dallas game. New England, they are traveling to Denver. Denver 7-point favorite at home. Jess, who you got?
Denver got hot late. Talking about teams getting hot late. I like Denver in this game. They're mile high. It's always hard to go there and play. The atmosphere and everything. I like Denver. I think that whatever Sean Payton said to Russell Wilson, Russell must have understood that it was his fuck up because he didn't say shit back. That was one of those weird. Like Payton's hot, and we've seen him get hot like that before, right?
But it's been a while. Yeah, he was extra spicy.
Yeah, it's been a long time. He got extra spicy with that, and he got like right in the face of Russell Wilson. And whatever was said, whatever was done, I think that Russell took notes. A fairly good game from Russell. I got the Broncos at home.
My dog Sean Payton went full Marty Schottenheimer. We got up in his fucking face, walked away, did a 180, and said, "And another fucking thing." That was fantastic. Full dress down on Russ. And which is weird because he just had one bad game. I'm in on Denver. I'm in on the points. I'm not in on Russ being the quarterback there next year anymore.
No.
I think we've wavered on that. New England is 3-2-1 Cancun on top of Belichick's putting his resume out clearly to other teams. On top of, I feel like Kraft is like a bad game away from just declaring Mayo the default coach already. I like Denver. I like the points.
Mayo's been with that organization for like 20 fucking years.
So. Which is why they'll let him fuck around and have like 2-3 bad seasons before they start to hold him accountable.
Yeah.
Because he's one of our guys.
Yeah.
He's a Patriot way guy. Yep. He's one of our guys. The Las Vegas Raiders, 10-point dogs across the board. The Kansas City Chiefs, who you got?
NFL, I really love watching football, but can you please stop having fucking three Monday night fucking football games? Like,
It's
it
weird.
is ridiculous to try to watch. Anyway, that's my rant on it. I like the Chiefs. Chiefs are at home. I think Mahomes finds a way to put some stuff together, string some passes over to Kelce. Kelce, I think, is going to play. He's healthy enough. I think that alone is enough to beat the Raiders right now. So I'm going Kansas City, and I like the points.
So I like Kansas City, but I don't like the points here. AFC West, in division matchup, on top of Kansas City is still struggling, on top of Pierce is still doing the nobody believes in us thing, I think Vegas sticks around. This feels to me like a 17-21 type game. I like Kansas City to win. I like Vegas to cover. The New York Giants, are they playing DeVito this week? I don't know, but I wanted to do the Italian hand, so I had to get it out of me. They're a 13.5-point dog across the board at all your favorite gambling websites against the Philadelphia Eagles, who are on a losing streak. So, damn, they picked a good time to run into the Giants, Jess. Who you got?
I just want to say real quick about Tommy DeVito. A lot of people talking shit about this kid going and, like, you know, trademarking some of the, you know, he trademarked passing Paisan, Tommy Cutlets. Some, he's, you know what? When you should never have been on this stage, you should have trademarked it because he's doing it and he's gonna make money off it. When you should never have been a starting quarterback in the NFL, and now you are, and you've won a couple games and you've made something for yourself, I say go get your fucking money, because chances are you ain't doing this next season. Okay, like, they're going to have a legitimate starting quarterback come in. Tommy DeVito will not be the starting quarterback in the NFL at all next year. I will almost guarantee that. Like, but what you're doing right now is you got people hyped. You got people acknowledging some of the stuff that's going on being said about you. Like I said, you know, the Tommy Cutlets thing, the little Italian finger thing. And you know what, kid, go make your money. Make it now and make a lot of it, because you're not going to be getting none of these like 70, 100, you know, $200 million contracts. They're not coming his way. He's not the guy. He's not a starting quarterback in this league, but I like his shtick and I like his heart and I like what he brings, the fire. But you know what? To me, everything about this kid screams backup quarterback. So, kid, go make your dough. I don't care how you do it. Trademark everything. Make your money.
Can I get your pick on this, by the way?
Yeah, fuck yeah. Eagles. Eagles.
Eagles and the points?
Fly, Eagles, fly. They win, and they win big. I like the points.
Okay. Let me say this. Let me correct myself. Pigskin Paisan was mine, not passing Paisan. Pigskin Paisan.
You need to go trademark that and then sell it.
Right now. God damn it.
Sell it. Yeah.
I'm gonna do it. If you're listening to this and Jesse hasn't edited this out, then that means I've already fucking trademarked it. So have fun with that. You know, Jess, here's my conspiracy theory.
Tell me.
Tommy said, yeah, I want to do these meet and greets at these little Italian spots, and he doubles his price or whatever, and he gets the bad press. But more importantly, his uncle gets a call from some Italian somewhere in old Sicily or some shit, and says, yeah, your nephew's showing up at that fight. He's showing up at that thing or else. And all of a sudden he shows up at the Italian soda stand, and he's serving sodas for free all of a sudden. So that's my conspiracy theory. He got uncle got the phone call, you know, from somebody in a nice tracksuit.
Uncle Tommy heard. He's like, hey, give
you gonna be there, or you're gonna be there. That's it.
Hey, your auntie, you know, she misses you, kid. Stop by and make a phone call. Right? Like, do your thing, what are you doing?
The phone call came in, and when the phone call comes in, that's it. You take the phone call. You show up at the fucking soda shop, and you're pouring fucking sodas on TikTok. I like the Eagles. I like the points. I am in agreement with Jesse. Get your money for as long as you can, because New York is a cold world, and the NFL is a cold world, and you will probably be out of the league longer than you will be in the league. Yeah. So get it while you can. Eagles and the points. Two games left here, Jess. Both, I guess, we can consider super sexy, but we went long, so let's try and keep it light and tight. Baltimore Ravens, on the road, they are a 5 to 5.5 point dog. Let's just keep it at 5, Jess. The San Francisco 49ers, potential Super Bowl game, if you ask me here, Jess. Potential Super Bowl preview, if you will. Who you got?
I can deal with that for right now, but I'm still not – like, I love Lamar. Don't get me wrong. I've said it many times. No. Lamar's my guy.
No, you
I don't think – Baltimore is really banged up, man. They're running back last week, Keaton Mitchell. His knee basically went the opposite direction, like, as far as it could go. Like, that kid ain't playing. Now they got to bring up 42-year-old Melvin Gordon to come in and run the ball for him. It's getting really thin for the talent on the Baltimore Ravens. I like this. I like San Francisco in this game, man. I like the points. I think Niners win by 9 or 10. I think that the Brock Purdy talk, you know what, man? Whether he's a system guy or not, here's the fact. He's fucking winning. So leave the kid alone. Like, I know media has nothing better to do than try to spot shit and say bad things about all these athletes and stuff. I get it. Like, that's what makes the news, and that's what people watch for. Brock Purdy's a good kid. He's a good quarterback. And yes, he's got one of the most uber talented offenses in the NFL. That just is his dumb luck for being seventh pick, in the fucking NFL draft. That's nothing
to
do with anything.
That people hold that. It's like we have to hold that against him. No, you don't hold that.
Did we hold that against Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady and all that when they had like all these
Peyton Manning,
Ben Roethlisberger? Like, no, man, we don't do that. You're just picking on the kid for no reason because you want to make you want to get your little check marks and you want to get your little hits. Look, Brock Purdy's a good quarterback. And again, I don't care if he's system or not. I think Tyler would agree. Our boy Tyler from over there. I think that he gets the job done, and that is what counts. I like the Niners in this game. Everyone's healthy. They're looking good, steamrolling into the playoffs. I think they get a big win against Baltimore.
That TMB show is very pro 49ers. Let's just keep it real. I'm going upset here. This reeks to me of 24-20. Niners are up with about 3-4 minutes left, and Lamar gets that ball, and we just get the Lamar magic, and they get out of there with a W. To piggyback off of your point, I say this all the time, Jess. I watch more Niners games than I do any other football team, including the Cowboys. And I've watched a lot of Brock. It's not systematic. I don't want to say just systematic. It's not systematic. He makes pro throws.
Yeah.
The same throws that Garoppolo could never make, he makes. The cool, the poise that he shows at the position, Garoppolo and a lot of quarterbacks can't do. A lot of quarterbacks in the league can't do. Now, if you want to say it's because he's got Trent Williams blocking for him, it's because he's got this, it's because he's got that. Okay, whatever. Credit to Coach Shanahan for saying, I'm going to do the best I can with the material I've got. And I know this guy's strengths, so I'm going to utilize him. And I know his weaknesses, so I'm going to hide them to the best I can. And defenses are having a hard time going, we've got to find what he sucks at and make him do that over and over and over. And that's the only way that we're going to beat him. I like Baltimore here. I like him in an upset. I right now have Purdy as my MVP. I have Lamar as second. And I believe that if Lamar wins this game with no stat padding, I think you got to put him as the – I think you got to jump him there. Jess, one last game. I wanted to save it the best for last. The Dallas Cowboys, they just went on the road. They just got curb stomped. They got F5'd. They got froggy bow splashed. Everything. they are taking on the Miami Dolphins. This is a road game for Dallas. I'm honestly surprised this is a low spread. But I am seeing 1.5. I believe the spread jumped. Let me double check here. Yeah, sometimes on this website it'll show where the line started and where it stopped. Here it is, I believe. No, I don't see it. I'm wrong. Jess, who you got?
This is biased, but also as unbiased as I can possibly be. I do think there's one way to stop a quote-unquote system quarterback. The Eagles did it to Brock Purdy last year. He basically just knocked him out of the game, right? Like, you go after him real hard. You put a lot of pressure on him. Eventually, you get to him, and then it just shakes everything up, right? I don't necessarily think that Brock or this next guy is a full-on systematic quarterback, but I believe that Tua has systematic quarterback needs. And that big need is to throw the ball to Tyreek Hill. Well, I happen to know a defense that's really good at getting to the quarterback. And they may not have been able to do that last week, but the games are changed now, and we're in a different place. And Tua is not the most athletic guy. He's not the most fleet-footed guy. I think that if Micah Parsons, I think he's going to play pissed. I think that defensive line is going to play pissed. I think those that secondary didn't even get used. They didn't have to guard nobody because Buffalo didn't really throw the ball. Now they're going to play pissed. I think you're going to see a different Dallas Cowboys team this week. And the reason I think that the spread is so low is because the Las Vegas guys are looking for the Dallas defense to step up more so than the Dallas offense, which I'm not, I don't know if that's going to be true or not. I think Dallas offense needs to be somewhat 50-50 in order to win those big games. And this is, in fact, a big game. Miami is a big game, right? They're a playoff team. Dallas is a playoff team. This is like, you know, a virtual playoff game right now. So let's get in there. Let's see what can happen. But I like Dallas's defense more and their ability to get to the quarterback. I like Dallas in this game, and I think that they cover.
You know, one thing I didn't mention when we discussed the Bills-Cowboys game was, you know, there were three penalties early in the first quarter that basically gave like a 14-point spread, where it's like, I believe there was a penalty on third down somewhere in the red zone. Maybe it was in the goal line or somewhere around the goal line that really hurt the Cowboys. There was another penalty. Maybe it was like like they ran into a punter. They were down 7-0, and then Bills get a first down, and there's like another dumb penalty that drive. That's 14-0. You're down 14-0, and that's that. They just couldn't get. They never got on track. I believe I have faith in Coach Quinn. I think he'll be able to figure it out defensively. I think he's gonna realize, okay, Miami has great running backs. You know, Mozart's tough to tackle. And they know that we had a weakness on our left side. So we've got to shore up our left side and make sure that we're leaning heavy that way. So that way Miami thinks, all right, we can't just run on the left side all day like Buffalo did. We've got to switch it up. If they don't do that and we just are doing the definition of insanity again, I will probably be jumping off of my roof. We will see. I'm leaning Dallas here. I'm going Dallas. I think Dallas wins by 4 to 7 points. I think this will be a close game, clearly, if I'm going 3 or 4 points. I think it's going to be something. This is how I see it going. I think Dallas goes up something like 10-0. Buffalo. Miami comes back. All of a sudden, we've got us like a 10-14 Miami lead. And then we're going to have that little bit of a back and forth, field goal here, touchdown there. And I think Dallas is going to be able to sneak out there. 2 minutes left. They're down a field goal. Dak gets a touchdown. They get out of there by 4 points. I'm hesitantly going Dallas and the points, Jess.
I think that it's a smart play because I think that the Cowboys are going to come out. They're going to play heated football. And McCarthy, I know that Mike McCarthy's not exactly the most like animated coach, but I would like to see him really like put a fire under their asses, and he doesn't even really have to. I think that team is emotionally
screaming.
No, they're ready to go. Payton. Dak,
I just want to see him screaming at Dak like Sean Payton did Russell. Just get right in his face.
Like I said, man, I've said it for years now. I'm a big fan of Dak. I think he's a perfectly fine quarterback. He's top five guy. I think that his biggest issue is maybe he's not emotional enough.
Gotta get fired up.
Fired up.
Got to give him a bang before the game.
Damn.
Jess, there's no reason for us to do shout-outs. We did all of our Christmas shout-outs at the beginning of the show, so let me shout you out, my friend. If we do not do a show next week, Happy New Year. Hell of a 2023. I'm looking forward to a 2024. I think we should try and pencil in a show next week. I don't know. I'm guessing you got the same days off, but we'll see.
I do have the same days off. If you want to do a show next week, I'm more than down for doing it. And then we can actually go and be like, hey man, this is the last show of the year. This potentially is the last show of the year. And if it is, to piggyback off my boy over here, Jason, it's been fun. 2023 has been a good year for us, for the pod, individually, personally, professionally. It sounds like both of us have been killing it, right? So I love this. And the pod, fuck man, we got close to 40 pods this year.
Close. That's impressive.
I think that this year has been probably one of our highest, like, you know, highest amounts of podcasts.
Did we get over 30? We got over 35.
We've got like 37. This will be 37.
Wow. If we hit 38, that's a lot.
Huge. That's we haven't done that for a long time. We haven't got close to that in a long time. So I just want to say, if we don't do a number 38 next week, Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. I love you and your family. You all be safe and take care of yourselves. Enjoy.
Peace out.